thank you very much, and it's great to see people having to sit on the stools over there because the room is so packed. And it's a pleasure to be here today, and thank you, Emma, for inviting me. I used to sit on the Children's Schools and Families Committee in the last Parliament, so I've known Emma a long time, and I think her energy and enthusiasm, which never seems to dim, is a great strength of the Governor's world. And I can't help thinking that it's not just changes in policy and increases in autonomy, but actually it's partly been the NGA that has helped lead to what I think is a more energetic and dynamic situation for governors than I've known before. I hate to say it, but is it possible? I think governance is almost today sexy. Well, it is, isn't it? It used not to be. It used to be seen as a... I don't know what it was. How it was seen before. I think it is sexy now. And I think Chris was saying something similar to me just now. With that shirt and tie combination, it's the kind of language you would expect. So I think things are on the up. Although still being a governor and the role of governance often does still seem unsung. But I hope today will be certainly an exception to that, because you perform a vital service, and you should, of course, be proud of it. School governors are, in fact, the largest volunteer force in the country, and that in itself is something to be celebrated and flagged up. With recent changes to the education system, as I've just said, placing new responsibilities on and presenting new challenges for governors, this is an interesting time. I'll look briefly at some of those challenges and changes in a moment when I look back on the report that my select committee produced last year on governance. For those of you who don't know, the select committee for education, each department has a select committee that scrutinises it. It's balanced from a party point of view, so there are 5 Labour, 5 Conservative, 1 Liberal Democrat. We meet basically once or twice a week, and typically we do our work of scrutiny of the department by doing focused inquiries on certain things. I have a whiteboard in my office, which Emma's seen, covered in every possible thing we could look at, and then we, as a committee, we discuss it and work out what we think we could add the most value to by looking into. So we looked into governance. If I have time, I want to leave. I know we've very limited time, and I'd like to leave some time for questions. So I might have to dump half my speech. But I might say a little bit about the Trojan horse affair, seeing that we are in Birmingham, although we haven't produced a report on that yet, so I can't actually tell you the committee's conclusions. Anyway, let me begin by talking about the report that the committee produced in July 2015, which should help give us an overview of school governance today, or at least then, anyway. We didn't, in our report, say that any radical changes particularly were required to governance in English schools. We found that recent legislation provides adequate flexibility for governing bodies to innovate, and this flexibility could in itself bring about radical change should governing bodies use those powers more widely. We did make some specific recommendations, though. First, obvious thing, it's as true of governance as it is in the teaching profession, it's about getting the right people, the right calibre, with the right skills to take on what is an incredibly important and responsible job. We supported the government in having done more to increase uptake of the school governors' one-stop shops, ESCOS services, in schools across the country, and welcome the fact the government funding is continuing until at least March 2016 for that. We were also glad to learn of the government's decision to accept help from the Confederation of British Industry. We felt there's a real opportunity to reach out to more people corporate social responsibility, whatever hook you need to hang it on, to say, come on, get involved with governance. Well, let's fill those vacancies and let's find ways by working together more strategically to make sure we get talented people to those schools which need them most. No point having a queue out the door of schools that are already doing well when we've got empty spaces, lack of skills, and the schools that need it most. We said to the DfE that the challenge was straightforward. Remove all potential barriers that you can from the recruitment of effective school governors. So we said they should look at the incentives for and requirements on businesses that release their staff for governor duties. And there's a huge, I think, opportunity to talk to business about developing their own staff. I was at a centre down in Gosport yesterday and talking to someone from the local LET that runs a large business. And I said to him, it's just a massive opportunity. If you could get your managers to go and be governors, they'll be doing the right thing. If you give them 3 or 4 days extra holiday, they'll actually put in far more than that sitting on the governing body. And instead of going on a course to learn about strategic direction or about budget management or other bits they may not have in the current job description, they'll do it for real. And they'll do it for real serving the community. So there's a huge opportunity there. And he said, at the end of the meeting, he said, one thing I'm taking away, he said, I'm going to go and I'm going to implement that in my company. He said, because I can see the sense of it. It's going to be good for my business, as well as good for the development of people and good for the community in which on which they rely, ultimately, as part of their people supply chain. So it seems to be a winner for everybody. We added that the legal requirement to give time off for governors and maintain schools should be extended to academies, which it isn't at the moment. Second recommendation was that we need to ensure governors receive high-quality training, and we said if take-up doesn't increase of training among governors, they should look at additional prescription. And the government should emphasise the importance of continuing professional development for all governors and head teachers. And of course, the National College is doing a lot of work on that as well. We talked about good self-assessment frameworks being available, which I know the NGA worked with the all-party parliamentary group on education and governance when they came up with their leadership's 20 questions. Linked to this, our report expressed support for training for head teachers and chairs of governing bodies alike to improve mutual understanding of each other's roles and responsibilities and to make sure that one doesn't cross over into the proper role of the other. Third, we said governors need the right support to do their job, and very much around the data that's provided. Obviously welcome the Ofsted data dashboard, and we'll see. You always worry when it's a government-related IT matter. But we'll see whether the new replacement for Raise Online fulfills our hopes. The danger is you often hang all your hopes on something, assuming it must do what you want it to do. And it would be nice if it turned out that way just for once. And beyond these helpful tools, an effective clerk, I understand, obviously we said it's vital to the success of a governing body, to act as the Robin to your Batman or the Watson to your Holmes. And the evidence we heard indicated clearly that the role of a clerk should be a professional one, akin to a company secretary. And we felt that could be one of the most important ways, with the increasing responsibilities of governors, of helping them be comfortable and sure that they were compliant with rules and also with the law. And that professional clerk has a critical part to play. We suggested that ESCOS might be ideally placed to get involved in the promotion and recruitment of more clerks. The government's response was a flat-out no. They thought it was singularly inappropriate that ESCOS should do that, but yeah, there we are. They say with select committee reports that, well, I say, actually, it's not they, is typically when you produce it, the government disses it, and 6 months later they slowly start to implement it. And that's not because we're not a think tank, it's not that we're brilliant. I say to people who come to our committee, we start as lay people looking at a subject like this, and we end the inquiry as lay people, not experts. What we do, though, is provide a platform for people who do know all about it to write to us, talk to us, engage with us, and inform us. And it's on the basis of that, reflecting on that, across, as I say, party political divides, that we could come out with consensus reports. Actually, I'm not sure that history would always be well served by 100% implementation of recommendations from select committees, but generally speaking, those recommendations do tend to do well over time, and I think the Institute for Government suggests 40% of recommendations are implemented select committee recommendations. We talked about the urgency of implementing interim executive boards when schools were failing, and criticised the Secretary of State for rather slowness to act, as well as local authorities to act. And we thought that given the urgency to act when a school is struggling, the absence of time limits for the implementation of IEBs was indefensible. Disappointingly, the government didn't consider introducing such time limits. Didn't think it was a good idea in response, which is unfortunate. The new regional schools commissioners will clearly have an important role to play in governing academy governance, regulating academy governance. And of course, there's a sort of developing field, isn't it, with David Cameron's speech a few weeks ago and article in one of the newspapers suggesting that their role might be extended to cover maintained schools